Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John in Kansas City. Nate Bucchetti in Atlanta, where he called the big win for Sporting KC last night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And right now on the phone, we have one of our favorite guests to talk to, Kim English, assistant coach at Colorado. Good morning, Kimmy. How you doing, man?
Doing great, Stephen. What's up, man? How you doing?
Doing fantastic. How's the family?
Everyone's good. Everyone's good. Enjoying the awesome spring weather. Thanks for asking. Hope your family's well as well.
You know, they're doing fantastic. But I don't know if anyone's doing as well as you. The National Association of Basketball Coaches selected University of Colorado assistant Kim English as a 2017-18 Under Armour 30 Under 30 honoree, recognizing a group of up-and-coming young coaches in men's college basketball. And you were the only selection from the Pac-12 and one of five from the Power Five conferences. Kim English, congratulations.
Thanks. I didn't know where that came from. I've been saying I think it's technicality. I don't think there are many coaches the names, but no, it was nice. I appreciate that.
And so for you now, obviously you started at Tulsa with Frank Haith. Now you're at Colorado with Tad Boyle, and you know no one can question your basketball mind and your love of the sport. How much are you loving being an assistant coach and the recruiting and everything else that goes along with what you do now? How much do you love it compared to what you thought you would do?
It's great, you know, and the best thing is just the relationships you build, you know, with the guys. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, my favorite part about being a basketball coach is just trying to become a better basketball coach, and it's improving your IQ in the off season and perfecting your craft, learning about the game, learning different strategies, learning from mistakes you made in the seasons past. But just now, I like the evaluating side better than the recruiting side, but you know, you do build some great relationships in recruiting, and hopefully when you get them on your team, it's no better feeling. I mean, the guys that I recruited at Tulsa, a couple of Kansas City guys, Jariah Horn and Darian Jackson, I still talk to those guys weekly, it seems like, and those relationships I'll have for the rest of my life. But that's the best part of it, is just building relationships with these players.
All right. Eventually, we're going to talk a little bit about the NBA playoffs, but, man, there's so much to talk about right now with college basketball and the recommendations made by the committee to improve college basketball. And then Condoleezza Rice had her recent telephone interview that's making headlines right now, and people reacting to that. All these things that you've seen, what's your reaction to all the recommendations that were made to help improve college basketball?
Well, there was no active college Division I college basketball coach on the committee. And because of that, there were a ton of unintended consequences for us as coaches. You know, I read it with Coach Boyle on a flight to Atlanta a week ago. He's very thorough and very smart, and we both kind of were reading it on the flight down. And it's really good for the student athlete, and it's really good for the NBA. It's not good for coaches. And I'm not sure that that group went into that thinking about career coaches. Because there were a few bad apples, and they looked at this thing like this is a corrupt thing and every coach in the country is cheating, I think they kind of went at it with that approach where they weren't really thinking about the coaches. And I think in turn, some unintended consequences from a lot of their recommendation will end up hurting prospective student athletes. So I'll just give you one example, and there are many, but the one about if you don't get drafted, you get to return to school. Like, sounds good on the surface. It's awesome for the player. It could be good for that university. But it in turn is going to hurt the handing out of scholarships to high school players or junior college players. Like, if we have to hold on to a scholarship for our best players, that means we're going to be well beneath our limit. If the University of, the University of Blue Blood, the school A that has three or four guys a year that has a chance of going pro, instead of having their roster count at 13, they're going to have their roster count at about 9 or 10 so that they have those scholarships ready to go just in case a player decides, just in case a player doesn't get drafted and he has to come back to school. There's a ton of unintended consequences, and as smart as Condoleezza Rice is, you can tell that she is not knowledgeable about our game. Some of their statistics were wrong, which I think is strange. I mean, they said 40% of players drafted into the NBA are foreign-born. In the last 10 years, that number is about 25%. They said 1% of college basketball players goes on to play professionally. Again, that's a skewed stat. There are players that are playing in the Ivy League that have no intentions of playing professional basketball that are included in that stat. If you take the number of Power Five and AAC and Big East and Mountain West players, the number of those guys that play professional basketball is about at half. And you can make a good living playing professional basketball outside of the NBA. So, again, there are a lot of unintended consequences in some of these rules, but I encourage every single college basketball coach in the country to read the commission, because if these things do go through, you are going to have to strategically plan for how you're going to run your program, because you are going to have ideas and strategies in place on ways that you recruit, on strategies, on keeping players, on getting players eligible. Just have that in mind.
Let's bring Nate Bucati into the conversation live from Atlanta. Nate, say hello to Kim English.
What's up, Kimmy? How are you, man?
What's up, Nate? I'm doing well.
So I'm really interested in some of the comments you just made, Kimmy, about these unintended consequences, and the one about the draft in particular stands out. And I'm wondering, you know, because the NBA benefits so greatly from the NCAA in terms of it being basically a free minor league system for them, particularly with the one-and-done situation the way that it is, where they get to evaluate players for an extra year before they take that risk on drafting them, you think there would be any chance or benefit of working with the NBA to see if they could reschedule the draft to put it at a different time? Would there be a time in the calendar year where the draft could take place that would allow you as coaches to not have to deal with that situation you talked about, where you have to hold these, you're kind of held hostage to whether or not you're going to have these players come back?
Yeah, but the NBA has no reason to do that. These playoffs, one of the highest due playoffs in the last however many years. The collective bargaining agreement is umpteen billion dollars. The NBA is doing as good as it's ever been, and they have no reason to change. But you're right. I mean, like theoretically, if the draft could be in May, that could help us in regards to what they're proposing to change. But what they're proposing is, the draft is at the end of June. Our first session of summer school ends at the end of June. So basically, there aren't any good players still available at the end of June. So if we're waiting around to see if our fringe NBA player is coming back to college or not, and he doesn't, we're left without a really good player. So again, great for the player, great for the NBA. It has very few positives for the college basketball coach. So to to find a way to make it a positive for us, we're just going to award less scholarships. So we're ending up hurting players that are fringe roster guys. There aren't going to be any spots for those guys because we're going to make sure that we're allowed to welcome back our player that doesn't get drafted. So, I mean, yes, I guess if the draft was earlier, that would be better, but the NBA is not going to have their draft before the end of the season, and the finals go through June, and the draft is thereafter. The NBA has no reason to change. The commission kind of made it seem like the one-and-done rule was the NCAA rule. That's an NBA rule, and the collective bargaining isn't up again until, I think, 2020. So, yeah.
So, Kimmy, you offer a unique perspective because – obviously, you played at Mizzou. You were drafted and you played in the NBA. Now you're an assistant coach at Colorado. And so let's say if you were on that committee or if you had input, what would you suggest? Or is there something that you like, something that you do like a lot based on the recommendations, or something that they didn't recommend that you think would be important to improving college basketball?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, any ideas I have would have to be litigated and discussed ad nauseum, and I would constantly talk to coaches around the country. And I don't know if they did that. I don't know who they spoke to, but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yes, the guys, I've always affirmed that I understand and see both sides of the argument. I see and I benefited from the college basketball system as it is. I thought it was a pretty good deal. I got to have a interview with NBA teams on Big Monday and ESPN every single night. I got to train at unbelievable facilities. I got to go to road games on charter flights and stay at great hotels and play in four NCAA tournaments. And I got all this great stuff. I also understand and get that high major football and basketball funds the whole operation. And I understand the athletes saying we want a bigger piece of the pie. I understand both sides strongly. I think there is a middle ground. Do high major football and basketball players deserve a little bit more money? Probably so. But where does that come into play with Title IX? It's not something that I could just say on a radio show and be fine. Any idea that I had would need to be discussed ad nauseum because you want to abide by Title IX laws and be fair. So to answer your question, no, there's nothing I can offer up today that I think would help.
Kimmy, do you think, one of the things that Condoleezza Rice did talk about was that she's in favor of the idea of athletes being able to make money off of their own likeness, but obviously she said that they've got to wait until some of these court situations like the O'Bannon case get settled before they can decide how to try to approach that. If that were the case, that would be players who are worth a lot of money, theoretically, to shoe companies who whoever, being able to cash in on that a little bit without the schools actually directly paying them. That would be a good thing or a bad thing for college sports?
Again, it sounds good. It sounds normal. You should be able to make money off of your name and likeness. But again, it's an unintended consequence because here's how cheating will go then. If our players can make money off of their name and likeness, all right, I'm a really good player, and he's going to have an autograph signing at Rally House. Free plug there for Rally House.
There we go. Very good.
Yeah. Rally House Studios here right now.
Right. So now I'm a coach. I tell my millionaire friend, hey, go drop by this Rally House deal, and, for every autograph signed, player gets $10. Go by there and drop off 100 shirts. or you know, it just makes it very easy for coaches, for people to manipulate payments covered by the veil of it being their own image and likeness. So yes, again, it sounds good, but that puts smaller schools with less support at a disadvantage. So a Loyola Chicago from 2018, a George Mason from 2006, a VCU from 2000. I think the beauty of our game are those situations. I think those happen less in a market that they're suggesting.
What have you thought about all the stuff that's come out with Adidas and college basketball and FBI and everything else?
It's sad. I feel for those guys' families. I'm not one to pass judgment. In this country, you're innocent until proven guilty, so I don't have much to say about that. I just it's sad, man. I think we have a great game, and I hate to see people leeching off of kids. I just hate to see that.
As a guy who loves this game, do you feel what are your thoughts on just the future of the college game right now? I mean, some people want to say that this means that, you know, I've heard people describe this as Armageddon and things like that. Where do you see the future of the game headed right now at the college level?
Well, the NCAA tournament and Turner have a deal through 2033, I think. And the NCAA tournament, 3 weekends in March, generate $1 billion. And so I think our game is fine. It's just up to adults to reinforce that, to keep – I mean, it's up to everyone. It's up to the AAU coaches, the high school coaches. It's up to everyone to be true guardians of the game and just keep promoting the game in its purest form, teaching the development, the fundamentals. I think the game is fine. I think it's so many fine coaches in this game at all levels. It's so many fine young men, and I think the game is fine.
Kim English is our guest. All right, Kimmy, while we still got you, I wanted to ask you about the NBA playoffs. I enjoyed your tweet a few days ago that featured pictures of you guarding LeBron James and offering your services to Toronto, and it appears that perhaps they should have taken you up on that offer, Kimmy, because that series is done, and now we'll see Boston and Cleveland, and then on the other side, I'm really excited to watch Golden State and Houston. Your takeaways on what we've seen so far in the NBA playoffs, and maybe what you think of the two conference finals matchups?
Well, it's been great. I mean, those pictures were cool with me, but the truth is, I fouled out in that game in like 13 minutes, all six on LeBron. So Masai and the Raptors front office know what they're doing. But I was kind of kidding. But no, it's been great. I mean, it's been predictable as in where we are now with 4 best teams facing off against each other, the best players, I think the best coaches, the best cultures, the best systems. It's we're going to see the game play the way it's supposed to be played, with great spacing and cutting, screening, passing, and it's a testament to the way the game is evolving to a game with positionless players offensively and multiple positional defenders defensively, and just less ISO and more passing and cutting and just trying to get great open looks at the basket.
So, like, as a coach now, when you watch this, do you like geek out about Brad Stevens and what he does? Because I think every coach I talk to just watches him and shakes their head, especially with all the injuries he's dealt with. I mean, he's unbelievable, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's a great coach. Don't get me wrong. I tend to think in the NBA it's more about the front office. The fact that Danny Ainge has allotted him with some really good players to step up and and perform in those roles. I mean, I know everyone kind of drools over his ATO ability. That's after timeout and the plays that he draws up. But I think it's more impressive in the culture that he's built there, the way he holds those guys accountable, the way they defend together, the way they pass the ball, the way they execute, how hard they play. Stuff he draws up out of timeouts are great, but the way they play on a consistent basis is more impressive to me.
Kimmy, do you agree with the people that say that the real NBA Finals is the Rockets versus the Warriors?
I don't know. I guess it looks like that on the surface because you just look at all that firepower. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like LeBron is playing better than he's ever played. I feel like he has a good cast around him. So I don't know. I mean, the Warriors are really, really good. When you just do, I like to call it superstar arithmetic. Like, that's the way I judge games now. Well, in the NBA, like, last year, people were like, can Cleveland beat Golden State? I'm like, no, it's just simple math. You know, it's, I think I said this on your show last year. It's Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, and Kevin Love. That equals three, right? Three great players. Then on the other side, you got Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, and Draymond Green. That equals four great players. Four is more than three. That's the way I kind of count things in the NBA, but I don't know now. LeBron's playing at another level. J.R. Smith is making shots. If Kevin Love is making shots. Jeff Green. You never know. You never know.
So, do you think Golden State beats Houston?
I do.
Well, maybe in the finals we'll have you back on and pick that because I'm hoping it'll be at least good. I want Golden State and Houston. I'd like to see Houston. I want to see something different, but it looks like we're headed probably to Golden State and Cleveland again, and we'll see what Cleveland can do with the Warriors this time around. But, Kimmy, man, I'm very happy for your success. And
yep.
And like I said at the top of the hour when we were promoting you coming on the show, I fully anticipate within 3 years or so that we'll have you on the show to do your first interview as a head coach at a division program. So I will look forward to that day. Just be sure you grant me the first interview, all right?
Well, thanks, man. There's a lot of luck involved for that to happen. But thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You know what's going to happen. Kimmy, thanks for the time, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, bye.
That is Kim English. Yeah. Maybe I'll be his dobo.
Director of basketball operations.
Yep.
He's a sharp dude, man. And I like the fact that he is... to me, it reflects a high level of intelligence when you can see both sides of an argument. And we don't see very much of that in today's world. And I think that sometimes people are afraid that it makes them seem less intelligent or something if they don't pick a side. And he sits there and tells you that he can completely understand both sides of some of these arguments in the NBA or with college basketball. That's impressive.
All right, Nate Bucati, go start waking up Carter Augustine and tell him he has a segment to do coming up to recap what happened last night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And then after that, you will be heading back to Kansas City, so have a safe trip, and we will talk to you. I'll talk to you when you get back to Kansas City. That's Nate Bucati, all hell breaking loose with his equipment. But you know what? That's the way we like it because it makes it real. It's the human factor. Charlie Carlin, back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.